Hi everybody, let's quickly talk about addressing and let's quickly do some addressing examples. For the first one, what is addressing? Addressing is the way that we are addressing the memory or addressing the processor in order to get some information or data across. So don't think about addressing as in address. Think about addressing as in talking to someone or trying to address something. What we are addressing in this particular example is going to be the processor itself. So since 6502 supports different ways of addressing, we are going to start with the simplest one called immediate. Why immediate? Because what we are actually doing, we are just simply stating the number that we want to get to the processor or to store to the accumulator. And what we are getting back is basically that number in the memory. So we are not calling anything outside of the direct number. This number is going to get assembled into opcode followed by the value, and this is going to be interpreted as just that number being put into the memory. For example, let's do quickly LDA. I don't know. Let's say that I'm going to go and put number 4. And then I'm going to clear the carry because I want to add something. And now I'm going to go and add this number 4 with number 3. Then I'm going to add number 2. And then I'm going to add 1 to all of this. As you can see, all the numbers here right now are hexadecimal because I'm prefixing them with the sign for a dollar, and this for the 6502 means that we are dealing with hexadecimal values. I want to show you two things. First, I want to show you how this looks assembled. So I'm going to be monitoring the memory for the location 600. This assembler or this simulator of the processor is using the location 600 to store the program that we assembled automatically. So we don't need to do anything other than press assemble here. And this program is going to be stored in the memory. The memory is not being read until we start to run the CPU. So you're not going to notice anything here until I just press step. So what do we have here? LDA 04. Basically means go to the accumulator and just put the number 4 in it. We can see from the debugger that this happened. So the accumulator has the value of 4 in it. And down here, we can see the program being assembled. The assembled part is this. So A904, then 1869.03, 6902, 6901. What does this mean? This means that A9 is an opcode, and this opcode means LDA. 04 is the value, and then 18 means CLC. It's an opcode for CLC command. Then we have 6903, meaning add to accumulator the value of 3. Then 6902, meaning add to the accumulator the value of 2. Then 6901 add to the accumulator the value of 1. As you can see, the numbers are directly written here. So this is the reason why this thing is called immediate addressing. If I just step into it, I'm going to look into the accumulator, and if everything is okay, 4 plus 3 is 7, plus 2 is 9, plus 1 is equals A if we are dealing with hexadecimal numbers, or 10 if we are in decimal numbers. So let's just step. I clear the carry, then I go and get the number 7, I add 2 to that, that's 9, add 1, that's A. The reason why I cleared the carry here was simply because the carry is going to get used as soon as you try to add anything. And if you don't clear the carry before the addition, what can happen is that you don't know what the carry is going to be. Some previous instruction could have set the carry beforehand, And this can create a problem for you because what you're going to end up with is that you are going to be adding, expecting the carry to be zero. And if it's not set to zero, you're going to be off by one. So we are always killing, clearing the carry before we start any sort of adding. Immediate addressing was easy. Immediate addressing basically means that we are simply putting the numbers into the memory directly without trying to do anything, any referencing, any talking to the memory at all. Now, the other way that we can do stuff like this is called absolute addressing. What I'm going to do, I'm going to pre-prepare part of the memory and then do a little bit of talking to the memory to try to get this information from the memory back. The first thing that I have to do is to prepare some values, because since I'm going to be using something called absolute addressing, this means that I need to have something in the memory before I'm able to read it, because I cannot reference something that I haven't already prepared. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just quickly do a copy and paste, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to put the value of 4 at location 0203. I'm going to put the value of 03 to the location 02. I'm going to put 01 to the location of 02 to 01, and then I'm going to put a value of 1 to the location of 00. So what I did is, in descending order, I just loaded some information into the memory using direct addressing, or directly just writing the values to the memory. If everything is okay, and I hope this is going to be the case here, my memory now contains information in these 4 locations. This simulator is important to me because what it has is this black square here. This black square here represents 4 pages, or 4 times 256 locations, starting from location 200 and ending with location 5FF. 200 is top left corner, 5FF is the bottom right corner. They are just 1D matrix or 1D array. They have the values that are increasing one by one in each row, and what they create is the ability for me to do some graphics. In this case, I'm not going to do graphics, but this is going to come in handy because I'm going to see these values being put in the memory. I'm going to see that when I did the stores, I'm going to be filling informations in these first 4 pixels, starting with the 4th one and then back to the first one. Let me just run this one before I run any other simulator. So if I assemble this and just go to debugger and step it, accumulator has the number of 4, then this gets stored in the memory. You see the purple pixel here. Then the same happens with the value of 3, then the value of 2, then the value of 1. And this is how I just created some values in the memory. Now, this is regular addressing, and this is something that I would regularly do. Starting from the location where we actually put the bytes in the memory, or to be more precise, filled 4 locations with different values, which resulted in fake pixels being lit. Let's now try and do a different style of addition. Let's try to add the numbers using referencing. So what we are going to reference the numbers by referencing the location in the memory where the numbers are stored. So what I'm going to do is the same thing that I did in the first example. So I'm just going to add the numbers 4, 3, 2, and 1, but I'm not going to be using them directly. I'm going to be referencing the memory to get them. So the idea is this: I'm going to grab the value from location 0203 hexadecimal. I'm going to clear the carry, because I always clear the carry before the addition. Then I'm going to add the rest of the numbers. So 0202, ADC 0201, and then ADC 0200. If I assemble this thing and call the debugger, I'm going to first need to go through the setup. Let's call this part setup because we are going to be doing it all the time. So let's step to it. I have stored the values of 4, 3, 2, and 1 to locations 200 to 203. Now, if I step, I'm going to load the accumulator from the location 203. So the accumulator is now 4. Then clear the carry. Then add the value from the location 0202 to the accumulator, making it 7. Then adding 2, making 9, adding 1, being A. And this is how we reference when we are referencing the locations from the memory directly. Okay, let's now build upon the previous example and let's try to do a loop. Why a loop? Because it's obvious. If I want to do something like this, so if I need to decrease the value one by one across a range of values, it is much easier to do a loop than to decrease the values one by one. So I'm going to try to do some kind of loop and introduce branching. So how do I do this? First, I'm going to define my starting values. I'm going to say that my accumulator is going to be 0. I explain why. I'm going to be clearing the carry. And I'm also going to be declaring my the value for my, so this is going to be, sorry, this is going to be the value of 0 and my x is going to be 3. So I'm defining my index. I'm going to count down from 3 to 0 and then I'm going to be doing some addition. What I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be creating a loop. And this is a label that denotes the loop. You can use whatever word you want. Just avoid the names of the commands that are actual commands in the order, the command actual instructions for 602. So I'm just going to name it a loop. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say ADC 0200 then X. This is the way of addressing that uses indexes. Indexes is used in such a way that the 6502 takes whatever is the base value of the memory. So in this particular example, 200, then adds X to that. And whatever the value is of X is in this particular moment, in my first run, it is going to be 3. And then it goes to the location 203 and just gets whatever is the value there and adds it to the accumulator in this particular case. So this is going to sort the things with the accumulator. And now I need to just decrease my index and I'm going to be branching into my loop. I have my branching instructions set in my instruction set now. There are a couple of branches that I can use. You're going to see that there are a couple of instructions basically based on whatever is in the whatever the flags are set. So I can do different things based on flags. I can branch on carry clear, on carry set, on result 0, on result non-zero, on result minus, on result not 0, result plus, and so on and so on. I need to think about this because I need to be aware how I'm going to deal with this loop. There, of course, as with any other loop, there are two main ways of dealing with this. I can either start with the value that is going to be off by one, so one larger, then decrease this value in the beginning of the loop. And this means that I'm going to be ending up with a zero, or I can do the last run through for the loop with the x being 0 and then decrease it. And this means that my number is going to be then less than the 0, so a negative value. In this particular case, my number is going to be FF, as it already is in the assembler. But I'm going to be just checking for this. So I'm not going to check for 0. I'm going to check for 1 less than 0, so for a negative number. Let me check what this is. So I'm going to be using BPL or branch on result plus, because what I'm doing is I'm jumping unless the value is negative. And if the value is negative, then I'm not jumping. So I'm going to just say BPL loop. Please note that this is going to be branch on positive, and this is going to be executed, or this loop is going to be executed when the result of this operation is positive. 6002 can use signed values, and the sign that it's using is the first bit or the most significant bit of the result. So if the most significant bit of the result is going to be 1, this is going to be treated as a negative value, and this is going to be ending the loop, or this instruction is going to just go straight through. Now let's assemble this and let's quickly debug it to see if I did it right. I'm going to just go and do the first a couple of instructions to put the memory where it should be. Now I have the accumulator set. I have the values in the memory. Now I'm going to set the accumulator to 0. I'm going to clear the carry, set the x to 3, and then if you take a look at this, I'm going to add the value of 200 plus x, so 203. So now my accumulator is 4. Decrease the x, then branch, then add 3, decrease the x, branch, add 2, decrease the x, branch, add 1, decrease the x becomes FF, and now I'm not going to branch anymore. When I press step, this is just going to go further into the memory because the simulator doesn't have any way of stopping or understanding what I'm trying to do. The rest of my memory, after the location of 6, whatever it is, so I can take a look at it here. So 6 1F is more or less empty. This is a break command, and this is done on purpose so that if you try to run something from the empty part of the memory, your processor is going to stop. The simulator is going to automatically stop, but in your step, it just sees that you are trying to just continue doing something, and it's just going to go to empty memory and do nothing. So my example here is done. My loop works, and I chose the right way of branching. There are other ways of doing the addressing, but I'm not interested in them right now, because what I want to do is I want to do a quick run through what can be done with what have we learned so far. The first thing I want to do is I'm going to be dealing with the graphic memory, let's call it like this. So with this part of this square here, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to find a way how to fill this part of the memory with a value. Obviously, I'm going to be needing a loop. So what I'm going to be creating is I'm going to first define a value. So I'm going to say, okay, I need a number. So the number is going to be 0, 1, whatever. If you push on the notes button and you read the notes, you can see what the different values mean. So one is going to be white, red, cyan, purple, and so on and so on. And this refers to this part of the memory. So I'm going to load one. I'm going to load my x value with the value of, let's say, I'm going to go from top to down. So I'm going to be starting from FF. I'm going to be creating a loop. I'm going to be storing the information from the accumulator to the location of the memory. So this is going to be 200, 0, 200. Let's use this way of writing numbers than x. And then I'm going to decrease the x. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, okay, when I reach zero, I'm going to be getting out of this loop. So I'm going to be saying branch on not equal or branch on, beq. So let me just double check this. Branch on result, so okay, I was right, bne. Branch result no zero, I'm going to be going to the loop. Let's do the assembly and let's run it. Okay, I noticed two problems. First, I just filled the first quarter of my memory. The reason for this is that this is 256 values. This is one page of the memory, or whatever can be referenced by using the x, and x is 8-bit value. So I have a problem here. The problem here is that if I try to reference this, I cannot reference the other pages. There is no way for me to count from 1024. I can count only from 256 downwards. The other problem is that I have a black pixel here. The reason is because I'm checking for the value of zero. When I decrease this, my last value that's going to be decreasing to is going to be zero. It's going to be checking for zero here, notice it, and just go out. So I'm not going to create a value of zero here. And I can solve this problem in two ways. One solution to this problem is to the way it should usually is done when people are used to high level languages. So I would just probably fix this by just getting the location. So STA 200, 0200, and I'm going to just fill in the first pixel before I even start, and then I'm just going to fill the rest of them. If you take a look at the resulting run, you're going to see it. So this is fine. I basically cheated. Now, there is another way to do it. What I can do, I can cheat the other way. I can start with a zero. If I start with a zero, my loop is going to be starting from zero and then immediately decreasing. So this is not going to catch that zero. So I'm looping one time more than I would normally do. So if I assemble this and run it, I'm going to be first getting the value of zero and then all the rest of the values and then finishing. Now, the obvious way to fill all of this, all of these pages can be done in two ways. The obvious way would be just to create multiple loops. I could just say something like, let's do this, let's do this, let's do this. Let's call this loop 4. Do the loop 4. Let's say that this is going to be 2, 3, 4, 5. This is going to be 4. This is going to be 3. I'm going to call this a loop 2. Loop 3. Going to loop 2. Going to loop 3. And this should be it. So I'm looping first for the first part of the first page, or first part of the square, then the second part, then the third part, and so on. So if I assemble this, I'm going to be just going through assemble, run, and this is it. This is an okay solution. This is not the optimal solution, and this is not optimal for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that I'm looping too much. It takes me too much time to execute all these loops because I'm constantly starting from scratch. So I'm starting from 255 and then counting down. What I can do it in a single loop. I can just delete all those loops. And what I can do is I can copy this command. I can just simply say, increase the value for 300, 400, and 500. And if I do this, if I assemble and run it, I'm going to be immediately filling all the values. So this is the way I could do it. Now, this is going to be the finish of this part of the 6302. The next thing I'm going to do in the next episode is going to be dealing with the interrupts. Another thing that I want to deal with is the addition and the way that the 6302 is handling signed and unsigned numbers. The thing with processors is that when you're dealing with numbers, the processor usually doesn't understand what the number is, or it doesn't understand how the number is being written down. And what we are dealing with when we are trying to understand which number we are reading from the memory, we have previously decided that we are going to be using a certain way of writing down numbers to represent some numbers. Let's talk about positive and negative values. When we are dealing with binary numbers don't have a positive or negative sign. It would make pretty much no sense to create a single byte that would, or bit, to just denote the positivity or negativity of a number. So what we have to deal with is the 8 bits that we have available when we are talking about 8-bit numbers. Now, what we have decided to do is we decided we are going to be holding these 8 bits. We are going to be either be holding the value from 0 to 255, and this is going to be called unsigned integer, or we'll be going to be dealing with values from -127 to +128, and we're going to be calling this signed integers. The reason why we are doing this is because we want to be able to do the calculations that are both the positive and negative, so we should be able to denote negative numbers. And since we don't have a sign, we need to use the most significant bit, or we are going to be using the most significant bit of the number. So the maximum value that we are going to be able to store is going to be 127. It's just that we are more or less splitting the 256 values that we have available in half. So half of them are going to be denoting the negative numbers, half of them are going to be denoting the positive numbers. Now, the processor needs to have a way to telling us this, because we need to check for it, and it would be much easier if we, when doing the maths, if we are able to have some sort of a mechanism that is going to enable us to just check for with the processor, is the number negative or not. Let's show you a few things that we can do. Let's start with the number that can be called, I don't know, I'm going to be just going with the usual thing, and I'm going to just be adding the value to, I don't know, let's start with the simple addition. I'm going to just be adding 1, clear the carry, and then add ADC. I'm going to be adding 1 to my 0 in the accumulator. If I assemble, debug and run it, I'm going to see that the accumulator is 0, then I add 1, and that's it. Please note that the flags, these guys here, are all zeros other than these two, and these two, one is the fixed, the one is always 1, and the other knows BCD way of dealing with numbers, and I'm not going to go into this. So this is just simply adding 1. What I can also do, I can also add numbers, and those numbers can be specific values. So let's try adding 1 to the value 7f. Why 7f? Because if you take a look at the number, or the representations of the number, you can see that 7f is going to be the largest value that can be written down in 7-bit numbers. So this is 7 ones that have a 0 in front of them. So in 8-bit notation, this is 0 and then 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Now, if I add 1 to this, this is obviously going to be the next value. So the next value is going to be 128. This is because the most significant bit has a value of 128. So this is going to be 128 or 80 in hexadecimal values. Let's do this. Let's assemble, debug, and step. So I have 7F. I'm clearing the carry and I'm adding 1. What happened is that I have a value of 80. This is fine. I was expecting this value, but my flag changed. My flag N changed in the, my flag V changed. Why? This one denotes that the number that I have stored right now is negative. This is negative because the first bit has been set to 1. So this is from the perspective of the processor, this is both the 128 and minus 127. Also, I have a V flag set. This is because this is called an overflow. When I'm dealing with the numbers that are crossing over the value from 8 bits to 9 bits, so I'm trying to add something that is bigger than 8 bits or that cannot be stored in 8 bits, I'm going to be seeing the carry being set. But since I can also be dealing, or sometimes I'm also be dealing with the numbers that are signed, I also need to have a way of understanding when I'm moving outside of the 7-bit values into 8-bit values, because those 8-bit values can be both positive and negative, depending on which way I'm trying to understand those. So this N and V mean that I'm going to have an overflow. Now, let's do another set of things. Let's do a value of FF here. Let's add 1 to FF. Now, I am not adding 1 to the 7-bit value. I'm adding 1 to the value that has all the bits set. So this is the largest number that can be represented by 8 bits. If I debug and step into it, first thing that is going to happen is that accumulator is going to have the value of FF. And I can see that my negative value flag has been set. This is simply because the processor says, okay, this number just has the most significant bit set, and this means that this value can be a negative value, or you can treat it as the largest possible 8-bit value. So now I'm going to clear the carry, and then I'm going to step into it, and I'm just going to add 1. Now, if I do this, I can see that my accumulator has turned into 0. This is because the next number after all the 8 bits have been set, so the 128, the next number is 256. This means this number is 256. This is the number that can be represented only by 9 bits. I cannot use 8 bits to represent this number. So what the processor did is it turned my accumulator into 0, because this is obvious. It set my carry flag because it said, okay, you now have a bit that doesn't fit into the accumulator, so this is the 9th bit that you're missing. And also it set the 0 flag because the accumulator is now 0. So this represents the value flipping over from being all ones to being bit set, that is a carry, and then 8 bits set to 0, because this is the next number after all the 8 bits being set to 1. This thing is called an overflow usually, so this is either called a carry or an overflow bit. And by why the overflow? Because I'm overflowing the values that I can use. I'm using the values that I cannot store safely in my 8 bits. And this is something that I must be very, 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 very careful in doing it. Now, in this part of the course, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to deal with the subroutines or the functions, on however do you call them. Usually, what we're using as the name of the for these things is subroutines, because the concept of the function does not exist in assembly language. A function would be defined by having a return value. It would have some sort of passing the arguments and arguments and so on. And this is not what we have when we're dealing with the 6002. What we have is the state assembly, so we need to take care of about everything. I'm going to just create a simple function that is going to do a thing that is going to be easy. I'm going to create a function that is going to be increasing a value in a certain point in the memory. So for example, I'm going to be just creating a function that is going to be, I don't know, adding 1 to the location 10 and adding 1 to the location 20. Now, how do I deal with functions or subroutines? The processor needs to know how the program flow is going to be working. So it needs to know basically what the next instruction is going to be. If I create a program that needs to run a subroutine, this subroutine is going to be placed outside of the normal execution flow of my program. So I need a way of calling it and then going back. In the particular case of 6002, we have two special commands and I'm going to introduce them right now. Let me just do the first part of my my program, and let me just, I don't know, set the accumulator to a certain value. I don't know, I'm going to use 01. Then I'm going to be calling jump to subroutine, and I'm going to say SL1. Then I'm going to be saying let's call the subroutine 2. And now I'm going to jump to the end. I'll explain why. I'm going to create a label here. And now I'll just do my two subroutines. SL1 is going to be defined like this. I'm going to just increase the value in the location 10 and then return from subroutine. And my SL2 is going to be increase location 20 and return from subroutine. Let me just monitor values from starting from zero here. Let me assemble this. And let me open the debugger and let me explain what I actually wrote down. First, I set my accumulator to 1. The reason why I did this is just to have some value inside my accumulator. And I'm going to be dealing with this when I'm going to be modifying this program. So for now, I'm just setting a value for 1. This is just a random value that I chose. Then I'm calling a subroutine first, then the second one, and then I'm jumping to the end. The reason why I'm doing this is because 6502 does not understand the concept of a function. It doesn't understand what the common flow is unless I explicitly tell it to. If I go into a subroutine, it is going to go to this particular subroutine, to this particular label. It is going to run whatever is inside here. And then when it comes to the RTS, from return from subroutine instruction, it is going to go and execute the next instruction after the one that the one which called it. The problem is that if I omit this jump end, what's going to end up happening is that my 6002 is going to straight go through these functions. It is not going to act as the normal assembler or the normal compiler that you're used to. Because normal compilers, when they see a function, they just compile it and then store it somewhere else. And they don't run it unless you are calling it. 6002 is going to just straight go one by one instruction, and if I don't tell it to jump over this part of the instructions or this part of the subroutines, it is going to simply try to run them, and it's going to create a lot of problems, and this is not going to end well. So now I basically just fenced off my subroutines by using jump to the end and then the end as a label. Let's see how this thing works out. Let's call it debugger, and let's first try to see what is going to happen. I'm going to run this, and I'm going to see that down here, my location 10 has a value of 1, my location 20 has the value of 1. So the first and the second subroutine got called. But this is not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in how this thing worked. So I'm going to reset it, and I'm going to put my watch and try to see what is happening at the location 1, let's call it 1F0. And let's run the debugger once again. So now, what I'm looking for here is I'm looking at the location 1F0 to 1FF. This is location 1FF. This is obviously part of the memory, but what is actually is, this is the top of the stack. Now let's talk about the stack. The stack itself is a piece of memory that has been logically separated from the rest of the memory by having something called a stack pointer. Stack pointer, this is this register here, and it usually points to the top of the stack, so the topmost location in the memory, and the location in the memory that the stack points to is the one that is considered empty. When I'm using the stack, I'm going to be doing two things. I'm going to be either putting things to stack or getting things from stack. Putting things from to stack means getting a value, putting it on the stack, so in this particular location where the stack is pointing to, and then moving the stack pointer down. Because the stack is moving in the last in, first out fashion, so I'm just going to be using the stack as putting values on it and then getting values from it. And this is going to work the same way as usually, let's say, plates in a hotel do. So, you know, the plate dispenser when you are in the restaurant and you have the plates there. So when you put the plate on the top, you can only get the plate from the top. If you put two plates, you're going to put them plate A, then plate B. But then when you're getting the plates out of the dispenser, you get the first plate. This is going to be under the second one. So you need to get the second one first, and then you're going to get the first plate that you put in. So this is called last in, first out. And this is how the stack works. Let me show you. Let me debug this from the start. So my accumulator right now is 1. Let me call my subroutine. What happened is that my jump to subroutine went and got here. So it got to the location that I was pointing to. This can be seen in program counter. But also you can see here that the stack pointer moved. It moved two places, and you can see that the location 0406 is here. This is because the 6002 uses a little endian notation, and this is the location 604. So this is basically this location here. This is the location of the next instruction that the program counter needs to jump to. So we have stored the information, where does my subroutine have to jump after it finishes running. Then the next thing that is going to happen is going to be me stepping into this. It is going to do the increase 10. And then it is going to be doing the RTS, so reading from the stack and putting this value back to the program counter. And you can see 605. This is because as soon as I put something in the program counter and start executing the next instruction, program counter is increased by 1. So this is this instruction here. Now, if I do this instruction here, the same thing is going to happen. Before I do this, just one note, the stack itself is considered empty now. Stack pointer is pointing to the topmost location. So these numbers here don't mean anything to the CPU. The reason why they are here is because the CPU doesn't have the computing power or the reason to zero out parts of the memory unless you tell it to. So it is not going to change the values in the memory. So this is just a random data that the that doesn't mean anything to the processor. So now if I just step and jump to subroutine 2, different numbers are here. And then I'm going to increase the value of int location 20 and jump back. Now my stack is empty. Now I'm here and I'm just going to jump and go over the entirety of the program, and that's it. So my program has been done and I have my stack clear. And this is the way the functions work or the subroutines work. Stack has a problem. The processor doesn't keep any count of what is happening is on the stack. This is the first thing. And the other thing is that the processor does not care when you are changing what value of which register. So what is happening is that when you're dealing with the stack and when you're dealing with the accumulator and everything else, you need to take care of the context. Context is the name for the current status of all the registers and everything inside the processor. So the value of stack pointer, the value of accumulator, the value of X and Y registers, and so on and so on. This is something that you need to take care of. There are two instructions that I'm going to point to. One is called PLA, so pull accumulator, and the one is called PHA, push accumulator on stack. And these are doing exactly opposite things. PHA means push accumulator to the stack. So when you execute this one, it doesn't have any operands. It is just going to go whatever value is on the in the accumulator. You just push it to stack. And if you do a PLA, it is going to just get the value from the stack and push it to the accumulator. Now let's do this. Let's just try to see what happens with my A accumulator when I'm running through the instructions. First, what I'm going to do is I'm going to check, see, okay, how do I push my accumulator stack? I go with PHA. So I'm going to say PHA. Then I'm going to go do my subroutine. And after the subroutine, I'm going to do a PLA. Then I'm going to set my LDA to value of 2. Then I'm going to do the PHA. And then I'm going to do the PLA once again. And this is going to be it. The thing I'm going to do with the inside my subroutine is I'm going to just check to see if I did anything to the stack. So I'm just going to do something to the, not LHA, but LDA. I'm just going to push something on the stack and it's going to be a value of, I don't know, FF, just to see that I overrode the accumulator, or put it simply that I did something to the accumulator so I can notice the differences. Now let's assemble this and let's go and debug it. Now, I have the accumulator set to 1. I'm going to push my accumulator to the stack. The stack has moved. The value of 1 is here. Then I go to my subroutine. My subroutine return address has been moved to stack. Then I'm going to set my accumulator to FF. I'm going to step and do the instruction that increases the number of in the location 10. And then I'm going to return from subroutine. After this, I have returned here. If I do PLA, I have my value 1 back on my stack, back in my accumulator. So what I did is I returned using these values, I returned from the subroutine, then I returned my value to my accumulator, preserving the context. I'm going to do the same thing with the second one. I'm going to LDA 2, push this value to the stack, go and call for the other subroutine, have my accumulator set to FF, increase the value at location 20, return from my function, then PLA or grab my accumulator from the stack, and finish my program, and that's it. This is the way that you should be doing and dealing with the context. Now, the problem starts once you lose track of what is happening on the stack, or what did you do and when you did it to the stack. Let me just do an error, or let me just create an error that is going to be an obvious one. Let me, instead of returning my, so I'm pushing to the stack, then after this I'm pulling from the stack, then I'm pushing to the stack, then I'm pulling from the stack. Let me do an error and let me just pull something from the stack while I'm inside my subroutine. What this is going to do is, this is going to be just telling the stack, okay, give me the last value that was put on the stack. Since I didn't put anything on the stack, the last value that was put on the stack was done by JSR, so by calling my subroutine, this is going to create a big problem, because I'm going to be grabbing from the stack the last byte of the, or the least significant byte of the address to where my program should be returning to. And I'm also going to be moving the stack pointer. So I'm just going to be misusing the pointer, and I'm not going to be able to go back where I started from. Let me see how this works. So my accumulator is now 1. I'm pushing the value of 1 onto my stack. Then I'm jumping to my subroutine. So far, so good. These are the values of my subroutine. Now I'm going to tell my accumulator that it's going to be FF. So this is it. Then I'm going to do a PLA. PLA is going to get the value of 5 from my stack, and it's also going to move the stack pointer here. So now my application thinks that these two numbers are the return addresses, because I moved, or I moved the stack pointer 1 byte up. Now I'm going to increase the 10, the location 10, okay, and now do the RTS. Instead of the returning the value of 0605, so 605, my program counter is going to have some value that it didn't expect. It's going to be 107, or to precise, 106 plus 1. So now I have stepped into a random part of the memory. It's not so random. You can, by running this thing and understanding what you did, you can realize which part of the memory you're going to run into. But this is obviously a problem, because now I'm completely outside of what I was expecting to, and my program is no longer running. I cannot use this program, because I just lost control of my stack and I overflew it. I just went and used the value from the stack in a wrong way. And this is something that 602 is completely going to let you do, simply because it doesn't care. It's the stack, and the way it's the stack is being handled is going to be handled by you. So you are the one who is responsible for the stack, and you are the one who is responsible for keeping the track of what is on the stack, what needs to be written to, what needs to be get pulled from the stack, and how those numbers reference whatever you're doing inside your application.